Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With us, a very special guest, Congressman Tom Suozzi. Tom Suozzi is the congressman representing the 3rd Congressional District in New York, which includes parts of Northeast Queens and Nassau County. He is currently a member of the House Committee on Homeland Security, the Budget Committee, and is a co-chair of the Democrats for Border Security Task Force. Congressman Suozzi previously served in the U.S. House of Representatives from 2017 to 2022, won re-election in 2023. Tom Suozzi is also an attorney and a trained CPA who has had a long distinguished career in both public and private sectors, serving as mayor of his hometown of Glen Cove from 1994 to 2001, and as Nassau County Executive from 2002 to 2009. As a senior advisor in the investment banking industry in 2010, and a litigator, law clerk to the Chief Judge of the Eastern District, and an auditor for Arthur Anderson and Company. Congressman Suozzi resides in Glen Cove with his wife, Helen, and their 3 children. Welcome to Reaching Out, Congressman. Thank you for accepting and coming on.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's great to be on with you, and I really appreciate the opportunity. And you know, my career sounds very confusing. People may not realize that in 2022, I ran for governor of New York and got my butt kicked in a Democratic primary. And then I was out of politics. But lo and behold, the guy that ran for my seat in Congress, because I didn't run that time, who won, became a national story. His name was George Santos. Well, he was really bad. And then they kicked him out of Congress, and then everybody came back to me and said, hey, Tom, we want you to run again. So I ran and I won. Now I'm back in the United States Congress trying to solve problems and help people.
Yeah, you say a national story, to say the least. It was an embarrassment. You talk about one of the great pretenders. That was it. It reminded me of the story when the New York Islanders was almost bought by somebody who didn't have any money. They were 50
miles
away. Remember that story?
Yeah, I can't remember the guy's name. Yeah, I remember.
He was buying the New York Islanders and he had no money. And somebody recognized it 15 minutes before the sale.
Yeah.
Yes. You have
a lot of con men out there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. What they say, there's a sucker born every minute. But
yeah.
You have often said that you always try to raise partisanship and build relationships with both the Republicans and Democrats. You've shown that in your career. Can you talk a little bit about the growing influence of extremists in Congress?
Yeah, people are sick of the extremists. They're sick of the far left, and they're sick of the far right. You know, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert and Matt Gaetz and these guys. And on our side, we got our own, on my Democratic side, we got our problems too with the far left. People are so put off by that. They just want people to sit down and work together to try and solve problems. When you go negotiate a union contract, you don't necessarily agree with the other side, but you sit down at the table and you try and make a deal and figure out where can we find common ground. That's what we have to do in the United States Congress. People don't want us kicking out the speaker and not doing the budget and pointing fingers and yelling at each other and, you know, the insurrection and... people are sick of all that stuff. They want to, hey, we got problems out here. We're worried about the cost of living. We're worried about the border. You know, we're worried about the weather. You know, we see remember the smoke last year where it's coming down from Canada. We had to close our window. I mean, what would we do if that went on for a month? We'd freak out. I mean, what could we do about that? So people are just worried about real life things, prescription drug costs. Do something about it. We're not paying you to point fingers at each other and attacking each other. We're paying you to be in the solutions business, talk to each other across party lines. So I was the vice chair of the Problem Solvers Caucus, 25 Democrats, 25 Republicans. We meet every week to try and find common ground. I'm working on a bipartisan legislation now with a right-wing Republican guy from Texas who happens to have been a Navy SEAL. He's a great guy, Morgan Luttrell, to figure out how can we do something at the border? Let's secure the border. Let's fix the broken asylum system that's being abused by so many people right now. Asylum was set up, you know, you and I are about the same age. I'm a little older than you probably, Greg. I'm 62 in August. So
just by a few months.
So you look good.
Thank you.
Don't crack, they say. So what was I talking about? A bipartisan bill that I'm
bipartisan.
Working yes. on the border. The asylum laws were set up in 1980. Now in 1980, everybody's worried about the Russians, the Soviets, about, you know, they liked it when people defected, when they applied for asylum. I seek asylum. Yes. There's even a movie with Robin Williams called Moscow on the Hudson. Everybody's like, yes, he defected. That's great. We love that. Now people are coming over the border in these huge numbers, not because they're fleeing Soviet persecution or Cuban persecution or persecution of the countries. They're fleeing across the border because they want to live a better life. Well, we'd like to help people live a better life, but you got to follow the rules. We can't take everybody. You just can't come over the border and say you're seeking asylum. Asylum's set up for people being persecuted for political purposes in their country. So we have to fix the broken asylum system. So one, secure the border. Two, fix the broken asylum system. And three, treat people like human beings. If you're a young kid that was brought here as a baby, and you grew up in America, you went to high school, grade school, high school, you learned the Pledge of Allegiance, you sang the Star Spangled Banner, and now you either have a full-time job or you're going to college or you're a veteran. Those are the dreamers. Give them a break. Stop threatening them with deportation camps like Donald Trump is talking about deporting these kids that came here as little babies. So let's give them a break. So let's figure out how to, one, secure the border, two, fix asylum, and three, treat people like human beings.
Is the idea of bipartisanship gone?
No.
No.
No, there's people, there are people, we did some big bills this year. We passed this big, huge infrastructure law. There was bipartisan votes on that. We passed, that wasn't this year, that was back in the beginning of Biden's term. The CHIPS Act was bipartisan. We passed the bill for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan this year. That was hugely bipartisan. There's a lot of bipartisan stuff happens. We just never hear about it because, you know, as they say in the media, if it bleeds, it leads. They just want to talk about all the bad stuff. There's a lot of good people. We just have to have the guts to stand up to the base of our parties. The Democrats got to stand up to the crazies on the far left, and the Republicans have to stand up to the crazies on the far right and start working together in the middle to get things done. I think it's doable. I think it's possible. I think it's more likely to happen under Kamala Harris than Donald Trump. But we just got to keep on working at it.
Now, you mentioned the CHIPS bill. For our listeners and viewers, because it's on YouTube, tell us what the CHIPS bill is, because a lot of people hear chips and they think of potato chips, they think of everything else. But I know it's computer chips and chips to make things that we need operate. So tell us what the CHIPS bill is and why it was so important to have that passed.
Such a big part of the modern economy is computer hardware and software. And, you know, they talk about artificial intelligence, but, you know, even the basic stuff, robotics, just in your car, everything uses chips. You know, your phone, your household appliances, everything has computer chips in it. Well, 95% of the chips in the world are manufactured in Taiwan. And right now, China is threatening to take over Taiwan, go to war in Taiwan. It's a very big, scary part of the global competition taking place in the world right now. China's building up its military, building up its economy, building up its technology, building up in space, build, 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 build. So we have to be very conscious that they're trying to do this. But one thing we learned during COVID is that if they cut off the supply chain, we're in a lot of trouble. We couldn't get, you know, masks and gowns. Okay, that was bad. That made things very difficult for us because we didn't make that stuff in America anymore. But what if they cut off computer chips? Our whole economy would shut down. So we have to start as a national security matter and as a way to create jobs in America that are union jobs, that people will make a good living, which we have to support unions because the idea is if you work hard, you make enough money so you can buy a house, educate your kids, have health insurance, and retire one day without being scared. That's the American dream. Too many people are working hard in America. They can't buy a house, educate their kids, have health insurance, and retire. That's what's why everybody's so angry, I think. So we need to create these jobs, and we need to build these chips in America, number one, for the national security purposes. What if China cuts off our supply to these chips, and we only have a few years to get this up and running? Number two, we want to create those jobs that are high-paying jobs here in America. Well, that's not going to just happen on its own in the marketplace. If the marketplace is left to its own devices, they're going to go make the chips where it's cheapest to make them. Well, the cheapest place to make chips right now in the world is Taiwan. So if we want to make chips here in America, we need the government to help subsidize it, to help get it off the ground, to build the infrastructure here in America, and then it can become a vibrant industry and can make money on its own. But the government has to help. So the Democrats and Republicans got together and said, hey, as a national security matter, and as a way to create jobs and get this important industry in America, we need to give billions of dollars towards the chips industry.
In February's special election, you leaned into the immigration reform and securing the border. When you won, many people in the Democratic Party said that you had set up the blueprint for Democrats on how to win elections by taking on the immigration issues head on. Can you talk about that?
Well, you know, Mr. President, that the unions, for the most part, especially the building trade unions, but all unions, their leadership often supports the Democrats. Their members are voting for Trump. So we have got to recognize, what is it that we is this disconnect? We're fighting for working people. We're fighting for people who want to just go to work and make enough money so they can have a decent life. The Democrats are. But what are they upset about? Well, they look at the border and they see these people crossing the border and they're like, what the heck's going on? This doesn't look right. What are they doing? They just this it seems so chaotic. What you got to do something about that. So I always say the best politician, the best elected official is the one who says what the people are thinking already. And the people are thinking, you got to fix the border. And so people came to me in my race. They said, hey, that's a Republican issue. Why are you talking about that? I said, it's not a Republican issue. It's what the people care about. We have to fix it, Democrats and Republicans. We can still look out for the dreamers and be compassionate and live up to the ideals of America. I'm an immigrant. My father was born in Italy. I'm a first generation American. I believe in immigration, but you got to follow the rules. And so to do that, we have to secure the border. So that's the whole bipartisan effort that I'm working on. I've said this very clearly to Vice President Kamala Harris's campaign. She's got to make this a big issue. She has to say very clearly, she is going to secure the border. And she's not going to be soft on this. And if she does, if she's good on that, and she's good on Israel, I think there's be no touching her, and she's gonna win in a walk. Because the only reason to vote for Donald Trump in the current world is if you're afraid of the crazy woke left. So if she goes to the middle and works on the border, I think it'll make her much, much stronger. And she's doing that, and I'm very happy about that. So, you know, with Donald Trump, you know, he's been saying the same stuff for 10 years now. Well, even your favorite TV show, like if you know, everybody loved the show Seinfeld or some show, you know, everybody loves some, even your favorite show only lasts for 7 or 10 years. People get tired of the same old thing over and over and over again.
Unless it's the Honeymooners.
Right. I still straight to the moon, Alice.
Yeah, that's it. Unless it's the Honeymooners. Tell me about the border now. What is going on with the border as we speak?
It's better today than it was a few months ago. I sent a letter to the president along with another Republican, Brian Fitzpatrick from Pennsylvania. I'm a Democrat, and said, you got to close the border. Use your executive power to do it. And he did. He shut off asylum applications in between what are known as the ports of entry. And he also did something where he gave undocumented spouses married to U.S. citizens a chance to get a work permit. Everybody thinks in America, if you marry a U.S. citizen, you get to become a citizen. They do movies about that. But the reality is there's a million people in the country that are undocumented, that are married to U.S. citizens, and they can't even get a work permit. So he did two executive orders. He did the tough guy thing, shut off the border in between the ports of entry, and he did the compassionate thing for these undocumented spouses of U.S. citizens, which is, I think that balance is the right approach. And that has dramatically stopped the surge at the southern border, because not letting people go in between the ports of entry. Plus, he's been working closely with the president and the president-elect of Mexico for them to help us to stop this surge from happening. The bottom line is it won't last. Everybody challenges these executive orders. And if there's a new president, the new president could undo the executive orders. They're always challenged in the courts. The only way to really fix this problem is to do it in Congress, pass legislation. And that hasn't happened for 30 years. It's been 30 years since we passed any bipartisan immigration legislation. We had a bipartisan deal in Congress back in February to secure the border, to build more wall, to hire more Border Patrol agents, to hire more judges, to do a budget, give money to New York, who's dealing with this problem, give money to all the big cities and states that are dealing with the immigration problem. It's a great bill, bipartisan, negotiated by a very conservative Republican, James Lankford from Oklahoma, and guy Chris Murphy, Democrat from Connecticut, and Kyrsten Sinema from New Mexico. The president said, I'll sign it. Kamala Harris said, I'll support it. Mitch McConnell even said he would support it. The Wall Street Journal said they would support it. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce said they would support it. And the president of the Border Patrol Union, who's a big Trumper, said he would support it. And then President Trump swooped in. He called up his friends in the House and the Senate and said, don't pass that bill. I don't want to give Biden a victory. I want to run in the chaos. Well, that's awful. That's the worst kind of cynical politics you can imagine. And there was a bipartisan deal. It was sabotaged by former President Trump. So it didn't do everything I wanted, but it did secure the border, and we should have done it.
You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237 Teamsters. You're listening to Congressman Tom Suozzi. And following up on immigration, you were quoted as saying that you wanted to build a bipartisan, broad-based coalition to bring order to the border and reform America's antiquated, broken immigration system. Being that that bill, in my opinion, was the most comprehensive border bill that we had in the last 30 years, how do you recover from that?
Well, we got a couple of things going for us. Number one is most of the primaries are gone. You know, they're over. So people are afraid of their primaries. That's what kills American politics, because everybody's afraid they're going to lose to their base. So the Republicans pander to the right, the Democrats pander to the left. Most of the primaries are over, and the Republicans who would have supported that bill don't have to worry about losing their primaries now, because Trump will come after them. And the same thing for the Democrats. Number two, people are worried about some of the things Trump is saying, you know, about, you know, deporting 20 million people. I mean, that would destroy our economy. That would break up a lot of families. You know, my coalition is business, badges, and the Bible. Business, they can't afford to lose all these people. Badges, law enforcement wants us to solve it in Washington. They don't want to deal with it in the streets. They want us to fix this in Washington, D.C. instead of making a local problem. And the Bible, you know, all men and women are created equal. It's not that all men and women with a green card are created equal. It's that all human beings should be treated with human respect and dignity. So let's figure out a way to solve these problems as good people and work together with business, badges, and the Bible.
Crane's New York Business once nicknamed you Mr. Salt because of your single-minded devotion to the issue of restoring the state and local deduction. What is Salt? And I know what it is. And why are you so committed? And I know why you should be, because it means money to us all.
Yep. New Yorkers, you know, they look at us in New York and they say, oh, a husband and wife are both working and they're making $150,000. They say they're rich. Well, mm-hmm. They're not rich. Here in New York, if you're a union husband and wife, you're both working, you're making $150,000 a year, $175,000 a year. You're living on Long Island, living in New York. You're making it. You're comfortable, but you're not rich. If you're making that kind of money in Oklahoma, they're like, oh, that guy must be rich. You're living in Iowa, you must be rich. You're living in North Dakota, oh, that must be rich. We have to recognize that along with these good wages that we bring to New York State with our unions and our good salaries, we've also got some of the highest taxes in the country. Our property taxes are choking us on Long Island. Our income taxes are choking us throughout New York State. We've got very high taxes compared to the rest of the country. Well, since the beginning of the federal tax code in the 1900s, they said, we're not going to tax you on the taxes you've already paid to your state and local government. It's called the SALT deduction. Well, in 2017, they capped the SALT deduction at $10,000. Well, people on Long Island, everybody's paying at least $10,000 just in property taxes. Forget about your income taxes on top of that. So we want to be able to deduct people's complete state and local taxes.
How much do you estimate, because I know you're an accountant, that would mean to the average family, the average
That
family?
would mean thousands of dollars to a family on Long Island who's making a. The people that are hit the worst are the people that are making between $120,000 and $220,000 a year between a husband and wife. And that would mean thousands of dollars to them every year in savings. And, we don't have to worry about the rich guys. We don't have to worry about the low income people. We have to worry about the people that are right there in that middle spot in New York that are going to work every day, doing their best, playing by the rules, and they got socked in the gut with this elimination of the state and local tax deduction.
Now, tell us how that happened, because a lot of people wake up and they say, I'm getting less money. The government's taking more taxes. Tell us how did that happen? I know how it happened, but I want you to tell our listeners
It
how that
was
happened.
Donald Trump and the Republicans in 2017. They needed to save a lot of money from the federal government. They saved a lot of money from the federal government by taking it from New Yorkers with the elimination of the state and local tax deduction. And they said to the president, "Hey, that's going to hurt a lot of New Yorkers, Mr. President." He said, "Well, they're not voting for me anyway." So it hurt New Yorkers, it hurt California, it hurt Illinois, hurt other Democratic states. And they used that money so they could pay for reducing the tax rate on the richest Americans from 39.6 down to 37%. They cut the corporate tax rate down to 21%. They weren't even asking for it to go to 21%. They were asking for it to go to 25%. They cut it down to 21%. So he gave them the biggest taxes cuts for the richest people and for the biggest corporations, and he dumped it on the little guys who go to work every day in places like New York.
And unfortunately, a lot of the little guys will be voting for him, not knowing that he's picking their pocket.
Well, that's pick the pocket. That's exactly it. There was a great article written back in the 1970s. I'll never forget. He said the Republicans are like pickpockets. One guy comes in, he bumps into you. And when he's bumping into you, the other guy picks your pocket. So they'll bump into you on the border, on transgender, on Israel, on, whatever, but they bring up some issue, get you all excited. Ah, I'm so mad. I'm so mad. I'm so mad. And when they do that, they pick your pocket. Well, you're not paying attention. So most of the people go to work every day. The best future you're going to have is people who fight for unions, who fight for the working men and women. And that is the Democrats. And the Democrats need to do a better job communicating on the basic issues. How can it be that the minimum wage in 22 states in the United States of America is still $7.25 an hour? That's absurd. If you make $10 an hour, you work 50 hours a week, you work 40 hours a week, that's only $20,000 a year. If you make $15 an hour, you work 40 hours a week. You work 50 weeks a year, you get 2 weeks vacation. That's only $30,000 a year. You're going to buy a house. You're going to educate your kids. You're going to pay for health insurance. You're going to retire one day. It's impossible. You want to make America great again? Pay people wages for the work that they do and give them benefits so they can live a decent life. That's how you make America great again. That's what the Democrats stand for.
Thank you. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this edition of Reaching Out. You're welcome to come back because we didn't finish our discussion. I would like to finish it. You have so much more to say. You're welcome to come back anytime you have the time to come back and we can finish the conversation.
Anytime you'll have me, I'll be back, Mr. President.
Thank you. You've been listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237 Teamsters. Our very special guest was Congressman Thomas Suozzi of the 3rd Congressional District in New York. Congratulations on your issues. Congratulations on winning in February. Much success in the future.
Gotta
And
win
thank
in
you for
November.
taking
Gotta
the
win in
time.
November.
Hey, congratulations on just being able to run and being in the conversation. You have a great message and it should be heard. Thank you
Thank you.
very much.
Thank you, Mr. President. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, President of Teamsters Local 237. The preceding pre-recorded program paid for by Teamsters Local 237.